Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Close Up. I'm your host, Joe.
And I'm Justin.
Today, we're talking about the, well, one of the most anticipated movies of the year by us and many others, for sure. We're talking about James Gunn's Superman, the first official effort of the new DC Studios, headed by James Gunn and Peter Safran. So, yeah, let's get into this. Getting into our medium shot now, what was your anticipation level going into this movie?
Not a heck of a lot, actually. Hmm. I stayed away from pretty much all the media on this. I mean, you forced me to watch the first trailer. Mm-hmm. Which I usually don't watch any trailers. I was kind of excited, but I really didn't want to see the start of a new universe again. Mm-hmm. You know, I advocated that the DC universe should just make movies of the characters we already know. And stop bothering with trying to make a interconnected universe. That's been my thing with the DC movies.
Yep. That's kind of how DC characters have always traditionally functioned best. Going back to the 1940s, DC characters were always more standalone and occasionally crossed over, like in a World's Finest, Batman and Robin and Superman sort of deal. It was always more the Marvel universe going back through the 60s that thrived on its interconnectedness. Like, you'd have Spider-Man show up in a Hulk comic, or more like the other way around, or like Thor would cameo, or Daredevil, or somebody in the Avengers. Like, they were always a bit more the ones to make cameos in each other's comics, whereas DC was like very rare that would happen. So it does play into the history. But, you know, that's kind of all the rage. And so now we have a new cinematic universe. And my hype level was cautiously optimistic. I was admittedly a fan of the Zack Snyder DC universe. I championed a lot of those movies by Snyder and not by Snyder, and even the ones that a lot of people really hated on. And I did want them to see it through, but also I knew that the brand by and large was tainted by that point. The general consensus was that was a failed universe, and it was probably in their best interest to wipe the slate clean, even though they had a lot of very interesting installments as a DC fan. Although I was always on record as saying, despite liking those movies, I never thought Man of Steel was a good base for an entire cinematic universe. It was a really interesting Superman Elseworlds one-off sort of deal. Okay, let's do a more gritty, grounded, Nolan Batman-esque take on Superman. Okay. But it never felt like an appropriate grounding for what I wanted to see out of a DC universe. It never really represented the DC I grew up with or became a fan of. It was just an interesting take. So I was excited looking at the trailers for James Gunn's DC, because it looked like it was going to bring not just Superman, but the tone of the DC universe that I preferred to see. Because in a lot of ways, people might be surprised to hear this, but DC is a more generally optimistic and idealistic brand than Marvel is. Marvel traditionally is the brand that's like brings its heroes down to earth and has a lot of gritty consequences for its storytelling, and their characters deal with a lot of real world problems and allegories. Whereas DC was always more of a fantastical, like, good people just do good things. And, like, there was a darkness there, but the fact that Batman got so popular sort of blew DC's dark out of the water, out of proportion by general audiences. Like, DC is not dark. DC is actually a very optimistic brand. It's just Batman and Gotham. But that's unfortunately the most popular thing in DC. So everyone just links the two. And the Snyder movies made Superman that way, so the narrative became DC's dark. It's not that. Gotham's dark. Batman's dark. And even then, not all the time. Just in the last 30 years, primarily. Ever since Frank Miller and Dark Knight Returns and Tim Burton's Batman 89 made that popular. Before that, Batman was more like Adam West. It was kind of gothic, but a lot of it was more bright and weird. But yeah, there's a bit of your history lesson. Suffice it to say, I was cautiously optimistic for a new take. But also, there was a lot riding on this movie to kickstart an entirely new universe, to revive the Superman brand in general. And really, Warner Bros. In general had been suffering through a bad couple years for movies. They've been going through a lot of brand shakeups and a whole whack load of negative PR for how they've been handling their IPs, trashing things for tax write-offs and not letting creatives get their visions made to fruition, constant studio meddling. So that was the question, was would James Gunn and Peter Safran be able to make the movie and the DC universe they want to make? Who knows? But getting into our close-up, my elevator review of the movie is: Superman's optimistic vibes and Silver Age-inspired world delight the comic book nerd in me, but its stuffed story needed more focus to adequately pay off its emotional beats. My thoughts in a nutshell. Do you have any encompassing...
No.
Nope, we're just gonna go full spoilers for this film review, by the way, if you're new here, and what we do. So, long story short, the Superman fan in me loved this movie, and the film critic, the hardened, cynical film critic, found many flaws in it. So a lot of my mindset is trying to balance the two, the subjective DC fanboy and the more objectivist film critic. So I'm kind of coming at that from two different sides here. So I think one thing that I've seen basically everybody agreeing on who's a fan and a critic is that the casting in this movie is spot on perfect for these characters. I'm nearly willing to go so far as to say that given a couple more movies, this cast could be as beloved as the Richard Donner films. I think David Corenswet, Rachel Brosnahan, and Nicholas Holt could easily be up there with Christopher Reeve, Gene Hackman, and Margot Kidder, given a couple more installments to really solidify themselves. They have the potential in them to be that definitive for our era of the 21st century. They're very strong takes on these characters who we've seen adapted a crazy amount of times over the last 80 years. But they still find a way to keep it fresh and show sides of the characters we either aren't used to seeing in live action or haven't seen in a very long time. Like, this Superman, for example, is not as brooding as we've been accustomed to basically ever since the 80s, really. I mean, Brandon Routh was very brooding kind of turn in Superman Returns, and Henry Cavill, just the weight of the world was on that guy's shoulders throughout his unofficial trilogy there. And the only place we got a more optimistic Superman was on TV, but I haven't admittedly seen Smallville or Lois and Clark, so I can only... Lois and Clark as well, but also Superman and Lois. So I can only comment so far on TV adaptations of Superman, which, funny enough, are closer to the source material in many ways than the live-action movies have been. I know people love Superman and Lois. I definitely have to check that one out. But as far as live-action movies go, this is the version of these characters that I've wanted to see basically my entire lifetime in a new movie. David Corenswet in particular is... he just makes me feel good watching this guy. He's charismatic, and he's hopeful, and he just seems like a really nice guy on camera and off. I watched a lot of his interviews with Rachel Brosnahan and Nicholas Holt, and he just has that aura about him in real life. He's tall, he's handsome, he's got a great smile, nice shining eyes, very calm energy. I nearly say it's a reassuring energy in a way. He just seems like a rock solid, stable human being. And he brings that energy into his portrayal of Superman, which I think you need. Superman, I've heard in terms of screenwriting, the way you have to write a character like Superman is not so much that, like, they develop, but that they're so solid in their way that people develop around them. And I think James Gunn found a good balance here with that, because this is still a Superman who's not that perfect yet. He's very far along in many ways, but he's also got a lot of room to grow. So he is shaping the world around him just by being who he is, but he's also not at the end of his journey. He is flawed, he is human, he still has some things to learn. And it's a good take on a long-standing character, which I know Zack Snyder did. You know, I feel like Zack Snyder was trying to do that kind of thing as well, but it brought Superman down to do it. It basically made everybody hate him and constantly critical of this alien, and he felt the weight of that, and it emotionally brought him down, and you kind of feel like Henry Cavill feels more obligated to do this than actually likes doing it. Whereas David Corenswet, his version of Superman is very, I like doing this. I want to help people. There is an obligation to it, but he feels it's his purpose in life. He feels this is what he is meant to do. And why do people try to put obstacles in my way? I'm trying to save lives here. If anything, he's very emotional about it. He's like, people are going to die if I don't do what I do. Why are people mad at me about that? It doesn't make him question his own purpose. He's still going to do what he's going to do, but he's got to learn that there's more socially acceptable ways to handle his crusade as Superman, and ways that are going to get him skewered in the press. So he's kind of more like, okay, so maybe kidnapping a foreign president and putting his back up against a cactus is not good for my PR. Maybe interviewing myself as Clark Kent, the reporter, has some ethical, is kind of on the sketchier side of ethics as a journalist. And okay, maybe I probably shouldn't be doing that. Maybe my sense of purpose that was driving me so long, I thought it was like something like a part of my heritage in a way that was supposed to be spreading this good, and then he finds out that his parents really intended him to conquer and start a harem and just lord over the people of Earth, which it sounds like they kind of still intended him to do that in order to help people, but just in a way that we as Earth beings see as despotic and dictatorship. Like, it's not necessarily bad by Krypton standards. I'm sure when General Zod shows up, his morals are probably bad even by Krypton standards. But like, Jor-El and Lara probably look like good people on their planet. But he even at that, he's like, okay, well, that's what I thought my purpose was, but like, it still is, just not for the reason I thought. It's like that because I was raised to be a good person, and that life has meaning, and like these ideals came from within me, not from some values from a place I've never been. He's kind of like making his own origin story in a way. Any thoughts on anything I'm saying thus far? Anything to jump in? What did you think of David Corenswit?
I don't know. He was good. Yeah, he pulls off Superman very well. He pulls off both having the dual identities. He pulls them both off quite well, I think. Especially, I found, like, a lot of times, like, Henry Cavill, I never bought the Clark Kent Superman disguise. Like, I never bought the glasses and the hair. It didn't really work for him. But for Corenswet, he actually, like, looks distinctly different. One of the first times he was, like, changed, I was like, what the? That's the same guy? Like, yeah, it's pretty, it's still obvious it's the same guy, but distinct enough that I was like, oh, they're actually doing a good job with this.
There is that offhand line by Green Lantern when Guy Gardner mentions that they're like hypnotic glasses.
Hypnotic glasses, that yeah.
Change people's perspectives, which is a comic thing, not in every iteration, but that is a thing. Some people have suggested alien glasses, lenses that change his face so people don't recognize him as well. And then there's, we talked a lot about David Corenswet as Superman, but there's also Rachel Brosnahan as Lois Lane. And I didn't know who David Corenswet was at all when he was announced. So I basically had to get sold on him through the movie and through the marketing of the movie and seeing him in interviews. But Rachel Brosnahan, I already knew from The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and as soon as I heard she was cast as Lois Lane, I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I've got zero qualms about this. I know she's perfect. I know she's going to nail it just immediately hearing that she was the one for it.
Yeah, she did an excellent job.
Yeah, and what I like about her is she is a very good foil for Superman. The way Lois Lane is supposed to be. She's a supporting character, but she's a supporting character who pushes the lead in by kind of grating on them in a way. Like that great interview scene early on. Like most supporting cast assist their protagonist through different obstacles however they can. She is helping him by challenging him. The entire time. He wants to go about things a certain way. She calls him on his BS and is like, well, you're being very hypocritical here and, you know, maybe don't kidnap the president. That is, and, you know, stick him against a cactus. That is torture. You might not consider it that way, but that's what it is. Did you consult the president before you went? And, you know, stop saying off the record when you're clearly on the record. Like, I'm grilling you. Not because I'm trying to tear you down, but because I'm trying to help you here. Really understand your perspectives, because we are on the same side ultimately, but you have a very naive view of the world, and Lois is a very cynical, hardened journalist, and so they are on the same side, but they push each other to be better. And that's why they're a great, you know, all-time iconic couple, and that's why I really like this iteration of it, because she pushes him without feeling too abrasive about it. You're not just like, oh, Lois is on screen again, and she's gonna tear him down some more. It's not like that. It's like, no, she has a point, basically every time, and he listens. And by the end of the movie, he learns some. He asked for an interview at the very end because he's kind of come around to the fact, okay, well, she was right about the journalistic ethics thing, and that I'm going to get, my secret identity is going to get busted if I keep trying to pull this stuff. I'm not, can't do this kind of stuff without a bit more support. And And also, if you really consider it, like, Superman did save the day, but it was really a joint effort from the Justice Gang and the Daily Planet staff. Like, Superman can't be everywhere at once, so it was the Justice Gang in the end who helped the people in the war in the Middle East. It was the Daily Planet staff that had a whole side investigation where they were gathering evidence against Lex Luthor and put him in prison. And it was the strength and powers of Superman and the brain of Mr. Terrific that put Metropolis back together and beat up all of Lex's henchmen. And so, you know, the hero did all the physically laborious parts, but he couldn't be everywhere at once, and it was just good old journalism that took the bad guy down, gathering the evidence and telling the story and speaking truth to power. So everybody, even the non-power characters, had an important role to play in the execution leading up to the final act. So then there's the third one, was Nicholas Holt, the main antagonist here. And I feel like they were trying to do, a bit of a younger tech mogul Lex Luthor, sort of like they wanted to do with Jesse Eisenberg. But unlike that version, that Jesse Eisenberg was more like, okay, what if Mark Zuckerberg was just psycho? And this version felt more like Lex Luthor. In that context, I'm like, okay, so you are more of a confident billionaire business owner guy, but you're also making like pocket dimensions, and you have a whole bunch of henchmen, and you're in the Lexo suits, and you have all these genetically engineered monkeys writing crap about Superman online.
That was great.
It feels like, okay, so we're embracing the comic book sci-fi weirdness of Lex Luthor, a bit more of the mad scientist roots from which he sprung originally. Because Lex Luthor originally was more of that mad scientist mixing with just coming up with crazy gadgets and inventions to kill Superman. And it wasn't until the 80s when he became big business guy with actual power and legitimacy in a capitalist society that gave him the resources to take on Superman, but he's actually just a company CEO by day. And I think they struck a good balance with Lex Luthor here. He's got a good game face when he's in front of the government panels in the Pentagon and trying to sell his ideas, even though everyone can kind of see the hypocrisy in them, but he's very persuasive that way. And he's also got this amazing petty side that I love to see, like the scene when he's kind of having a meltdown and he's just knocking the pens off his table just so people are picking them up at his feet.
Yeah.
Or that he imprisons all his ex-girlfriends for talking smack about him after they break up. I think there were multiple girlfriends of his in that pocket dimension prison.
Yeah.
Just the sheer evil pettiness of this guy. This is a man who's willing to watch the world burn to satisfy his own ego. He's willing to open up a rift and like mess with technology, which Mr. Terrific said, you know, could destroy the world just because he can. Because he thinks he's so smart that, no, I can control this. It's fine. And even if it does get out of hand, they deserve it for picking Superman over me, for liking him more than me. His entire plan basically amounts to, I'm going to ruin his reputation and then kill him. Which has been done before plenty of times, but it's never been done, like, with this level of zany comic booky sci-fi flair to it. So it's more about the presentation that I quite enjoyed. Any more thoughts on all this? I'm talking a lot. I'm rambling.
You get to points that I'm about to say, but then you cover the pretty.
Okay, you bring
pretty
up,
well.
You, so. You bring up something though.
I got nothing.
You got nothing. Nothing at all.
Nothing.
First thing that comes to mind. What do you got?
The Justice Gang. They're good.
Sure.
They're entertaining enough. Little bit felt just a little too much James Gunn for me.
With the Justice Gang in particular?
Specifically, or? The Justice Gang, yeah.
Well, the Justice Gang is kind of where he's in his pocket. It's the weirdos and misfits that are kind of in a group together. It's very much his Guardians of the Galaxy or his Suicide Squad.
I just think it was a little too much in this movie. It just didn't quite fit. Like, if it was backed off, like, I don't know, 25% of the James Gunn-ness out of there, and it would probably be great.
Yeah, it's the thing. I am mixed on the Justice Gang in general, because I think what James Gunn does incredibly well, forgetting general story, I think with whatever screen time his characters have, every single one of them, even the least used characters in the movie, like Steve Lombard and Cat Grant and the Daily Planet staff, like every single one of them had enough time that I understood their personalities, I know who they are, and I want to see more of them later. Every single one of them, I got a great taste for who they are, even if I didn't learn a heck of a lot about them. That's what James Gunn is great at, is scene-by-scene dialogue and banter and figuring out who characters are and how they play off each other. Where James Gunn struggles a little bit more is making overall arcs pay off. But he's great at getting you to like characters on a scene-by-scene basis. Everyone feels distinct. It's not like a lot of Marvel movies where they're all super quippy like Tony Stark. Like, everybody's got their pocket that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
The only one of the Justice Gang I don't think really did much of anything was Hawkgirl. And she was kind of just snarky.
We got nothing from her, yeah.
No, she was kind of just snarky in the background. And I really like Isabella Merced in The Last of Us Season 2. She's great, and I want to see more of her in this role. I don't even know if this Hawkgirl is the alien one or the reincarnated one, or I don't know anything.
Maybe
about.
She's neither.
That's possible too.
But we have no idea because she didn't get a lot of screen time.
No, not much. And really, James Gunn's focus seemed to be more on Guy Gardner, Green Lantern, and Mr. Terrific, which
was great.
Yeah, Mr. Terrific was terrific. Guy Gardner was just good comic relief when he showed up. He's the overconfident jerk all the time, and that's just who Guy Gardner is. And I don't know if he's going to be showing up in HBO's Lantern show. I know that's more of a Hal Jordan, Jon Stewart vehicle, but I kind of want to see how he plays off of the other Lanterns going forward, because that's where Guy Gardner's. And I desperately want to see the One Punch moment adapted. The infamous One Punch moment where he challenges Batman to a fight, and then Batman knocks him unconscious with one punch, and Blue Beetle's just like freaking out in the background. One punch. That's a very famous Guy Gardner moment. Which, hey, you know, color me surprised. We got a great adaptation of Guy Gardner before they did Hal Jordan or Jon Stewart right in live action. So
that is surprising.
This is the first time I've seen a solid adaptation of Green Lantern on screen. And I'm not super familiar with Mr. Terrific, but I did love what they did with him in this movie as well. What was that actor's name? Edie Gathegi. He was amazing. I love his deadpan, straight man vibe. Super serious, but also hyper competent. I also like when Lois Lane calls him on stuff like, what, you put tracking bots in all your friends' bloodstreams?
I put tracking bots on everyone.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, he was great. He was by far the of the supporting cast, he was by far the standout to me. I know absolutely nothing about this character, but from watching this movie, I understand enough about this character.
I don't know a heck of a lot about Mr. Terrific except what they showed here. He's a tech genius, and he wears the Fairplay jacket, and he has the T-spheres that can do cool stuff. And for my money, he got the best action scene in the whole movie. I mean, the Superman action stuff was great. We'll get into that. But I thought the most, wow, this is pretty cool, was that perspective shot of Lois Lane stuck in his T-sphere bubble. And he's just taking out Lex Luthor goons in the camp with his T-spheres. Which called to mind James Gunn's work with Yondu in the Guardians movies. I think they even used a very similar effect on the T-spheres as they're kind of whipping around and beating guys up.
You know what's funny is I did not even click those two scenes together till you said that.
I didn't as I was watching, but it was a day later. I'm like, Yondu, that's why it feels a little familiar.
Oh, I see.
But it was still pretty awesome just seeing the spheres whipping around, beating people up. And I like how they kept it locked in on Lois Lane's perspective and then just dollied around her in circles.
Yeah, that was good.
As you see him single-handedly wipe out the camp. I think that's good to show that despite the Justice Gang being considerably less powerful than Superman, there was a bit of a sense of danger going into the camp. Like, oh, well, like, it's just Lois Lane and Mr. Terrific, two people without any powers, and they're going to take on this whole camp. Oh, he can do that. Okay. So even non-Superman level heroes are still very competent at what they do. In a similar vein, I also really like that gag where there's that interdimensional, the fifth dimensional imp outside causing havoc in the city, and Superman just kind of casually flies into his Lois's apartment and has a whole conversation with her. Are you going to deal with that? No, it's they got it. It's fine. It's not that harmful. And I forgot to say before, compared to the Justice Gang, you know, Superman's the kind of hero who he'd save a squirrel, he'll save dogs, he wants to save the kaiju. He just values life very strongly. The Justice Gang are a little bit more rough around the edges. They don't care quite as much. Like, they care more about the bigger picture. Like, Hawkgirl just drops the president in the end. She's like, well, I'm not Superman. Kills him. And the way they handle the kaiju as well. You know, Mr. Terrific sent his T-spheres in there, blew it up from the inside. He's like, well, we could have studied that or euthanized it humanely or something. Do you have any more thoughts on the action? Yeah, I thought it was very well done. I always like a good kinetic feeling action sequence where the camera was always moving, the flying felt really fast, the hits felt like they had weight, and it wasn't just simple punching fights all the time. There were some obstacles, like when they were in the pocket dimension and Superman and Metamorpho had to hold up the baby through the plasma stream and fight off bad guys while they were trying to keep the baby from getting disintegrated in the stream. Or trying to, you know, dodge the kaiju's fire breath and stuff like that, or when the engineer's nano drones all went inside Superman and he couldn't punch his way out of that, so he just flew up to space and then crash landed back to Earth. And there were just different ways out of the problems that I enjoyed to see.
Well, I think part of it was that, like, that was part of Lex's plan, was that it's like, I know all of his moves.
Yeah.
He already knew how to counter everything he did, so he had to kind of change things up to really make the combat work, right?
Yep. Yep, for sure. He was mostly focusing on Ultraman for a good while there. Which, yeah, I mean, I think that twist was pretty obvious about Ultraman right away. I mean, if...
I didn't know.
If only because as a... It was a little bit different than I thought it was going to be. Because you call him Ultraman, and comic book fans know, oh, Ultraman, the Superman doppelganger from Earth 3, where he's an evil dictator. Okay, but then he doesn't talk the whole movie. I'm like, okay, so I know it's Superman. And then there's that scene they get into the Fortress of Solitude, just having him there, and Superman mentions, well, that's DNA locked. How did you even get in there? And I'm like, well, yeah, because Ultraman's also Superman. I know this.
I had no idea of that. That was a twist for me that I was like, what the heck? Because there was absolutely no reason. They just got into the Fortress of Solitude. I'm like, how? How did he do that? And even like his own people, like Lex's own people were like, how did you do that?
Yeah. Now, what the twist was for me was that it wasn't Ultraman from Earth 3, but a clone, which I'm like, okay, well, that makes more sense. Evil, despotic Superman probably wouldn't want to work with Lex Luthor. Actually, on Earth 3, Lex Luthor is like the good guy, and Superman is the evil dictator. So he definitely would not want to work with Luthor upon further thinking. But a lot of people think that this clone has a future, that he's some kind of version of Bizarro, or will turn into that going forward. So remains to be seen. But he gets knocked into a black hole. I don't think that's the end of him. And I know there might be some controversies like, oh man, Superman, even though he cares about life, he killed his own clone. Like, okay, well, it's not a General Zod situation all over again. It's not like it was a lot harder of a fight. I mean, like,
Zod... He didn't kill him anyways. He did it himself. The clone did it himself.
He got sucked into a black hole.
Yeah.
It was sort of a Batman Begins situation of, I'm not going to kill you, but I don't need to save you either. He sort of just threw him off as he saw there was like a thing falling into the black hole. He's like, well, I'm going to let him get sucked into the black hole here because I'm getting crushed pretty badly.
My perspective on it was that he kind of considered it not living.
It didn't really have a brain.
No, it was mostly a flesh robot. Like, yeah. It was... Lex controlled it, basically.
It was a flesh robot that listened to a very evil person, and it was also kind of him and made of him without his permission, and it didn't...
Yeah, think. See?
It was nearly a suicide situation, if anything.
That's why I was like, I don't think he really cares, but... Did he kill that other girl, though? I think she died.
No. No, she was fine.
Oh.
She just got knocked unconscious and they needed to move the fight away.
So you had the flesh robot guy and then the robot flesh girl.
Yeah.
That's a duo there.
Yep. Except she still had all her mental faculties there. Yeah, I think the CGI was... I think they were going for more of a stylized look here.
It's fine. It's pretty good.
Like, a lot of it didn't look super realistic to me and was taking me out a little bit. But also, I read up later that Crypto was pretty much entirely CGI. So I know they
I knew right off the bat that he was CGI.
So I don't think there was even really a stand-in dog. I think he was CGI in every shot. But I'm like, they could do a more realistic CGI if they wanted to. And that was the evidence of it. They were trying to keep you more immersed in.
No, see, that's why I don't want to be too hard on this movie, because it's actually following things that I've wanted for a long time with movies. The CGI is good enough to portray everything, but you still know what's CGI and what's... I mean, obviously there's some stuff that's green screen that's... but CGI characters and CGI stuff still kind of looks like CGI enough that you're like, okay, I know it's CGI, but that's fine. And they're also doing the thing where it's like, we're doing the characters and this is a universe. We're just doing a story. So they did two of the things that I've specifically requested from movies. So I don't want to be too hard on the CGI because it's like, well, that's probably a good thing. CGI has gone too far. We kind of need to dial it back.
All right. And what did you think of the general visual style?
It's good.
I'm mixed on it. I think it's a very subjective thing. I don't think there's anything technically wrong with it, but there are a few things I found a tad distracting. He used either a really wide angle lens or a fisheye lens for like a lot of shots, which I'm like, okay, well, I think there's a time and a place for shots like that. They, you know, they worked a lot in the action scenes, but even in dialogue scenes, he was using that kind of framing a lot.
Sometimes, yeah, it was a little.
And also the way that the camera moved, which in action scenes, great. The way the camera is moving, it's tracking the action. Like, it was great. It was great flow. It kept it wide. You could see the action. That's great. But in dialogue scenes, it still keeps moving a lot. There's a lot of like dolly circle shots and crane shots, and just even in basic dialogue scenes, the camera was moving around like crazy. And I'm like, okay, you're keeping it dynamic, which I appreciate, but maybe dial back a bit. It might be a little bit much for dialogue scenes.
It's a style. It kind of depends on the dialogue scenes.
Yeah.
Like
I said, there's nothing wrong. It's a subjective criticism I'm having with it, where I'm like, it was a bit much for me, but it wasn't technically wrong.
I think it was fine. I don't know. It just, nothing, it didn't stand out to me that it was like anything abnormal. It just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Pretty average. Like, there were some very unique shots that I thought looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I don't know. It's telling the story. It's effective. It works. But yeah. Nothing to write home about.
Sure.
At least camera-wise.
Going back to the dialogue a bit, I just have a note here where... Did you feel like it was a bit... I don't know if it was an editing thing or a performance pacing thing, but sometimes I felt like the dialogue was protracted in a way. Like, there were really long pauses between sentences or responses, which once again is an entirely subjective thing, because it did feel like a more realistic conversation. But I'm more used to things in movies and TV kind of moving, and usually you cut out the pauses where people are thinking about how they want to respond.
No, I really liked the pacing they did with this, because they did let... I find oftentimes when the conversation is fast, you don't have time to think about the conversation as if you were a participant. I think about the interview between like Clark and Lois at the beginning.
Yeah.
That scene I thought was particularly well done, because it gave you enough time between their dialogues back and forth, but there were some parts where they overlapped each other when they're starting to get really argumentative and it sells it. But it gives you time to really think about the dialogue you are hearing, where a lot of movies, I think it's because the dialogue is not that great,
mm-hmm,
that they just want to get through it. But this one kind of took its time, and I think the dialogue was pretty well written for the most part.
When he was being serious, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought the comedy, maybe I'm just getting a little James Gunned out, I don't know, like you were saying before, but sometimes I felt like it's, just a lot of the jokes didn't necessarily land for me. Like, I thought they were like, huh, that's funny, but I wasn't like laughing at anything.
That's just why personally. I wish it was like, dial back the James Gunn-ness by like 25%.
Because in stuff like his Peacemaker show, I laugh my ass off when I watch that show. That show is freaking hilarious. Guardians of the Galaxy, I laugh a lot. Like, his Suicide Squad movie, This is probably the least I've ever laughed in a James Gunn movie, despite seeing the cleverness in it. But maybe that's just because I'm bringing my own expectations into this movie and I wanted it to be a bit more serious, because when it was serious, it was working very well. Not that he overly undercut some dramatic scenes with humor, but it did happen a couple of times in that James Gunn Marvel-ish way. Just a few times, and not like really in your face, but I'm like, I could have gone without a joke there.
Yeah, sometimes it actually like undercut the scene.
Yeah.
You're like, did we need comedy in this scene? Not particularly, and it kind of makes it lesser.
Yeah, I think the one that stands out for me a lot was right at the end when Superman has his big monologue to Lex, and then Krypto starts batting Lex around like a rag doll. I'm like, okay, I don't have a problem with that per se. It's just, if we let this breathe a little bit more, it could have been a good dramatic hero-villain standoff. But I understand James Gunn's compulsion. Okay, we want to see the evil guy get what's coming to him and give the dog another moment. But it was...
Yeah, I disagree with that one. I think that one worked well. Because it was starting to get a little heavy there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the back and forth of ideals would have just went on forever.
Yep.
So it felt... That one I felt was more necessary, but... Yep. I guess it's personal opinion.
For sure. I think what we agree on is that it kind of undercut moments, but it's really a subjective case of where.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think going back to what you were saying before, not just about the dial back the James Gunn-ness, I feel like this movie stand could have been a lot better if it had just focused up a little bit more. I think the Justice Gang, like you said, was the thing that was taking the most time out of this movie. If you kind of just use Mr. Terrific like you wanted him to and dialed back Green Lantern and Hawkgirl a little bit more, you could have had a bit more time to focus on what Superman was doing. Because I feel like the big... Because there was so much going on in this movie, and it all pays off on paper. Like, plot-wise, it all wraps up. But I didn't necessarily feel the emotional weight of all the things that wrapped up. Because if you had just cut one or two things out and focused on the other ones slightly more, I would have felt all the payoffs a lot more. The fact that James Gunn managed to juggle all these balls for 2 hours was incredibly impressive to me from a screenwriting scenario. But as an audience member watching this movie, I'm like, ah, okay, well... It works, but it could have been better.
It was a bit much going on,
and I think it was just a matter of focus. It could have hit if it narrowed its purview a little bit more. And I think the other big problem for me, from a screenwriting perspective, was that Superman himself is a very reactive character in this movie. Generally speaking, in screenwriting, you start with, what does my character, my protagonist, want? And then what's getting in their way? And what do they really need at the end of all this? I feel like what Clark wanted changed a lot throughout the movie. It wasn't just... And the reason that leads to emotionally satisfying payoffs is you want one central thing, usually, and you see someone go through all these trials on the path to getting what they want, and then they either get what they want or they don't. But you as the audience are very clear on what the end goal is, and when they get it or they don't, it's more, okay, we've seen their journey and we are kind of in their shoes too, and oh shoot, I'm sad we didn't get what we wanted, or yay, we can celebrate, we got what we wanted. But because Superman, what he wants changes throughout the movie, it's very hard to have a hard-hitting resolution, because he wants, okay, so, you know, halfway through the movie, I think the most he wants is right in the middle when he's looking for crypto. That's when he's most in the pocket of, okay, Lex Luthor stole my dog. I'm gonna find him and search everywhere for him and have to juggle all these other things to do it. That was the most, okay, I have a very clear goal here, and this is what I'm trying to do. Besides that, it was like, okay, well, I I'm trying to balance my relationship with Lois. I'm trying to help my public image. I'm trying to balance my apparently despotic Kryptonian heritage with my Earth heritage. He's got a lot going on. So by the time it comes to an end, everything does resolve, but only the most focused on ones feel like, yay, we can celebrate. He got what he wanted. Or he didn't get what he... like. I think that's why, going back to wants and needs in screenwriting, I think that's why the Kryptonian one hit the most for me. Because he wanted to do right by his Kryptonian heritage, and then he found out that wasn't necessarily a heritage worth continuing on, or that he doesn't necessarily believe in it. And he comes to realize that what he needed all along was to pay more mind to his Earth parents, the kindly farmers who gave him the ideals that he lives by. Krypton was always just an imaginary thing, but what was real was his parents and the farm. And that's the through line that I thought had the most payoff, just because we saw the most elements of it in a traditional screenwriting way to say, yeah, this is satisfying in the end. Everything else was kind of, okay, you want the, oh, and it's resolved in like half an hour. Okay, oh, and you want the, oh, okay, that's resolved in half. Oh, you want this? Okay, but we're kind of going to ignore that for most of the movie and circle back around to that. Like, it was resolved, but it wasn't like super important throughout the movie, and like everything wrapped up, but only a couple things felt really important in the end.
Well, I think that was kind of the point, though, was like, you called him reactive, but that was kind of his character flaw. Like,
yeah,
being reactive is why he got in trouble in the first place for stopping a war, is because he's like, oh, well, I'm saving people. And that was his kind of his flaw to his logic.
Yeah.
So it kind of made sense that was the way the movie presented his own struggles, because that was how he was responding to everything.
That's true. Because I hesitate to call him a passive protagonist, because he's not really. Everything that comes at him, he makes active choices about, but he never really seeks things out for himself. He is more reactive, which, like you said, if you want to spin that as a character flaw, I don't think it's, once again, it's not wrong. It's just technically abnormal from a screenwriting perspective.
I just, how James Gunn wrote this. Just think that it was a choice, because it, you know, there's pieces of the movie to back it up. That is one of the first things that somebody calls him on and says, hey, you can't do that. You can't just be reactive and go and stop a war. Right?
Without really thinking through what you're doing.
Yeah. Here. And that's why I think it was definitely a character choice, which makes, if you're making it as a character choice, it's not wrong to do for the movie, right?
Yep. Yep. It's not definitely not wrong. It's just atypical. And I think that's why I have a hard time wrapping my head around it, because I'm like, well, I see where that line of reasoning led to less emotional satisfaction from me in the end, despite it also technically working. It's like my mind says, okay, you were clever and you did a good job, but my heart says, okay, well, I didn't feel it as much as I wanted to, and I think your choices were why. So I do see both sides on what James Gunn tried to do here. I do respect that he's trying different things and trying to be unconventional. And I think this movie is going to age pretty well, because it feels like, well, one thing especially that I think will help it is that it feels like an in and out adventure in Superman's life, which I saw, I don't remember who I saw mention this as a review, but I really like their point that it feels nearly episodic in that you come in, he's already in the middle of an action, and you end the movie, and his adventures continue. And 10 years down the line in DC, you don't have to rewatch this one as some origin story or some climactic moment in his life. It's not, it doesn't have like the weight of an Avengers Endgame sort of thing bogging it down, or the weight of other movies or a universe that's bogging it down. You can just go in and watch a Superman adventure, and you know, it is what it is. It's flawed, but it's mostly a well-done adaptation of Superman in a standalone adventure, and you're in, you're out.
To me, it feels a lot like the DC animated movies, or yes, even the shows.
Yeah.
That it starts you right where the story that we're going to be resolving happens.
Yeah.
There's no build up to it. We just start. And I think that's a lot of, that makes a lot for rewatchability.
Yeah. There's no long exposition explaining what the world is. Like, they do it very efficiently. 3 centuries ago, metahumans were introduced, basically. 3 decades ago, the most powerful one of all showed up. 3 years ago, he became Superman. And 3 minutes ago, he just lost his first fight.
And I think that's only because this is the first movie in the universe that they kind of have to explain a bit of the history. But I don't think they're going to need that going forward.
No. From what I've gathered, James Gunn plans for every movie to feel as standalone as possible, whilst also planting seeds in there for crossovers later down the line that are going to be more Avengers-esque. But every movie is supposed to feel as standalone as it can. And if you're watching them all, you're like, oh yeah, that's what happened. Kind of like people are anticipating with Bizarro showing up later. You're like, okay, well, at the end of this movie, he defeated the villain. Great. But if this guy shows up later, the movie might try to make its own standalone explanation of, okay, that's where this villain came from. But if you watch the first one, you're like, oh, okay, well, we know he did this because Superman knocked him into the black hole, and we kind of saw more of the origin story there. But they can also make that work in a standalone movie later if he comes back as a villain again. So I respect what they're going for. It feels very A New Hope in a way, where you're just dropped into this already established world. He's not the first superhero ever. He's just the latest in a 300-year-long line of metahumans, and just happens to be extremely powerful. And I want to address the criticism that people say he gets beat up too much in this movie. They don't like that Superman gets beat up so much. And I was thinking about that, and I'm like, okay, so this is an in-universe explanation. It's not because he's weak. It's because he never lets himself rest. The movie opens up with him falling from the sky after getting beat by the Hammer of Barovia, and he's a bloody mess, and he lost his fight. Okay, Superman was at full strength before the movie even started. We never got to see what that looked like. So then he gets healed up in the Fortress of Solitude, and the robots are like, hey, you're still not at full strength, man. You gotta rest. He's like, no, I gotta get right back to it. So then he goes right back to it and fights some more, and he doesn't really rest again. He maybe like goes to bed for one night.
But if you think about it, his rest time was all in darkness.
That's true.
Every time there was light, he was pretty much working as Superman.
But yeah, that gets to my point of the second time. So he never really got to rest after that first fight when the robots were like, dude, you need to rest. And he goes right back to it. So then he goes, and then he gets ended up in Lex's pocket dimension with the kryptonite poisoning. And then once he gets the kryptonite poisoning again, they're like, man, you gotta rest for a couple days at least. And then he's back to it again the next day. Multiple times in this movie, he took injuries where he needed multiple days to heal, and he was back to it the next day.
he's only like half healing, and then he's like, okay, I'm good, I can stand again. What do you mean you can stand again? That's not good enough.
Yeah, so he got crushed before the movie even started, and then took like basically enough injuries that he needed most of a week to heal up, and then gave himself less than half the time he needed. So yeah, no wonder this guy isn't... Yeah, he gets beat up a lot, but also he wasn't at full strength from the start, and he just kept getting weaker throughout the movie and never let himself get a second win.
Hey, he was getting beat up in full strength. Clone Superman still lost to him, so...
Yeah, and that's another thing to address the complaints. Most of the time he was getting beaten up, it was by a full strength version of himself. So... You know, he's not weak by any stretch. The only one who could beat him was himself, with the smartest man in the world speaking instructions into his brain for game plans. So, yeah. Anything else? I mean, yeah, I got plenty of things I probably could talk about, but it'll just drag it out. I am a little bit mixed on the Jor-El and Lara twist, but also I'm like, well, there is a bit of precedent for Jor-El having some dubious morals by Earth standards, and I'm not... Like, fine. It's a version of it. There might even be more to the story later. Who knows? Supergirl shows up for...
It's being translated. Maybe it's a bad translation.
That's possible. Although it did.
Oh, sorry. Lex Luthor said it was an accurate translation.
Yep. Mr. Terrific said it was later, and there were multiple people who were like, yeah, that's accurate. Maybe there was some discrepancy still, or maybe that was just it, or maybe that wasn't the full story. What I think is most interesting about that is how it's going to play in the Supergirl story next. Because I don't know for a fact this is what they're doing, but also I'm pretty sure this is what they're doing, because this is just usually how Supergirl is. Most versions of Supergirl, she grew up on Krypton, and she's only younger than Superman by virtue of space-time travel BS.
I was going to say, she's supposed to be, like, older than him by a lot, right? At least by their birth year.
By their birth
year,
she's quite a bit older. Yeah, by their birth year, she was like 12 when Krypton exploded, 12, 13.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the synopsis for the new Supergirl movie says she's 21, and David Kornswit's like 33. So basically by the time she got to Earth, many, many years had passed. For all I know, it depends what they do. She could have been like crash-landed on Earth a year ago, or she could have been like the Supergirl TV show or other versions where she crash landed on Earth as a 13-year-old and Superman was already an adult. And so like it depends. They could do different things with it. But the thing I'm most curious about is if we've already established Jor-El and Lara as not as kind of sketchy by Earth standards, I wonder what Supergirl's going to be like as somebody who was raised in that culture. Does that represent all of Kryptonian culture? Is she trying to break out of those norms? Because, you know, the funny thing is what people like about Henry Cavill Superman, they're probably going to get with Supergirl, because she is that more alien creature who never really feels at home on Earth and is like, well, this is not what I grew up with, and I don't really know if I even want to protect these people. These aren't my people. Whereas with Kal-El, they always just were, full stop. He was raised here. He never really knew anything different. Supergirl did. She's the one who has to be convinced humanity is worth protecting. Clark was just raised in it. They are just his people. So I think Snyder fans, I think, will probably like Supergirl more than they expect to, because I feel like those themes that Henry Cavill had are going to crop up again in her movie, but I don't know how far they're going to take it based on that twist with the Kryptonians kind of being bad guys. I'm like, So how is Supergirl if she was raised there? Remains to be seen. I mean, clearly they're on halfway decent terms from the 2 seconds we see in this movie. He kind of just looks down on her as she just goes to Red Sun Planets and gets drunk and leaves her dog with me, and she doesn't train him very well, and there's no discipline, and she crashes into my house and gets her dog. Like, he kind of just thinks she's irresponsible.
I hope the Supergirl movie is on an alien planet, and she's got to break out of jail for being intoxicated or something.
Maybe. I want
to see them do something completely ridiculous.
Well, I'll tell you what I know about it so far is that it's based on a pretty renowned comic called Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. It's largely based on that particular comic, and it is allegedly a more spacefaring adventure. Like you were saying,
there we go. See, space. I like it.
And I know at some point, she has interactions with Lobo, played by Jason Momoa. So,
got it.
That is basically all that's known about the new Supergirl movie, what its source material is, and that Jason Momoa is in it.
Well, that's quite a lot. Yeah. You're like, this is the source material. Well, that's.
Yeah,
that's very telling.
I haven't read that source material, so I'll be surprised when it comes out. I don't really know anything about it other than it's mostly space set. So, yeah, I mean, could talk about this movie for quite a bit longer, but yeah, basically there's nothing outright bad about it, but a lot that technically, subjectively, I say, okay, well, I might have preferred this or that a little bit more. It did grow on me the more I thought about it after I got out of the theater. It's, once again, as a Superman fan, I adore it. It's colorful, it's bright, it's optimistic, it's right. You know, the casting is spot on, is right in the pocket. It makes me want to see more from this new universe. The film critic in me says, okay, well, it was, you know, there were some things... Yeah, all right, but nothing that's bad. Not, like, I'd still definitely recommend it. It's worth a watch at minimum. I thought it was even pretty darn good. Hardcore Superman fans who didn't get started on Zack Snyder, I'd even say it's a must-see for them. So it kind of runs the gamut depending on if you're coming into it as a Superman fan, as a cynical film critic, or just as a casual.
Yeah, I had it floating somewhere between mid-tier and good. I think I'm going to go with a good rating just because I think it has rewatchability. If it didn't have rewatchability, I think it would definitely be a firm mid-tier, but...
That's generally where my rating system comes in. Worth a watch is worth a watch. Like, you might get something one time only, and that's it. To be the next level up, pretty darn good, I think it needs to be rewatchable. And that's... I am kind of riding the line there at, like, a 45 degree, but I do... I agree with you that...
It's right in that area.
I do agree with you that it's rewatchable, and I feel like it'd be better on a rewatch, especially when this universe is further established.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that's James Gunn's Superman and the first of a brand new universe, which we'll see where that goes. It's not doing amazingly at the box office right now. Actually,
I thought I heard it was doing really good.
Domestically, it's doing amazing. Internationally, it's bombing.
Oh, I thought it opened bigger than Lilo and Stitch.
No, not quite. I think Lilo and Stitch opened at 160, and Superman opened at 120.
Oh.
But it is still, like, one of the highest openings of the year domestically.
It's up there, see?
Oh, for sure. Like, domestically, it's doing very, very well in the U.S.-Canadian market. But just internationally, it's very much underperforming. And some people think... There's kind of three big problems with it. Some people are like, okay, number one, the James Gunn humor doesn't translate internationally. Number two, the DC brand internationally has just been kind of dragged through the mud in the last 10 years. People don't want to see another DC movie, even if it's just a reboot. And it's not just DC, but superhero movies in general are taking a hit internationally. And number four, some people are blaming, is, well, you know, Donald Trump. Like, people blame him for everything, but generally it's because he's tarnished America's reputation around the world so thoroughly, and the world sees Superman as an American poster boy, that they're like, we don't want to see this American grandstanding flag waving BS right now.
Yeah. Well, Wei told me, because she's from Taiwan, she told me that this was the first Superman movie she's ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just because Superman's just not that popular in Asia.
Yeah.
Which makes up a large portion of the international audience. He's just not a popular character in Asia, so...
Yeah, I think what's telling is I knew he was a popular character in Latin America, and it's bombing there too, apparently, because, well, from what I read, there's a lot of people who, like, really loved Henry Cavill there, and they're still very upset that that universe ended, and also they're just down on America in general right now. So it's kind of coming out at a very bad time for superhero movies, for DC movies, for international relations with the United States in general, when he's always been known as the truth, justice, and the American way guy. So all things considered, it's not going to be a box office bomb based on tracking, but it's not going to do amazing numbers either, especially internationally, which is unfortunate, but maybe word of mouth will pick things up in the coming weeks.
Was the budget, like, stupidly high?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I think the budget was $225, and some people...
Oh, that's not stupidly
high. But the marketing budget was stupidly high.
Oh.
You couldn't walk out your front door without seeing an ad or a billboard or a TV spot or
something. Well, at least it's not like an $800 million Marvel movie.
No, it was like a $200 million budget, so, like, between production budget and marketing budget, it was probably like between $400 and $450.
So a non-Disney money, big budget.
Yeah, and right now people are predicting it might make between $500 and $600 when all's said. Which James Gunn is like, I don't need this to be a $700 million movie. Like, I think David Zaslav and James Gunn, they both said they'd be happy with $500, and it does seem like it'll get between $500 and $600.
Well, there you go. It'll break even then.
And then, you know, toy sales will also put it over as well, because Superman, like, how many people I've seen wearing t-shirts of the new logo on it? Like, they are selling merch pretty well so far. But I think they knew going in, and I think James Gunn had to get assurances that David Zaslav wouldn't, like, cut them off before they were ready, because everyone at Warner Bros. Knew the DC brand wasn't doing amazing before this movie. So even a moderate success is still a win for the brand at this point. They need to regain general audience trust that they can put out a good product and also kind of get them excited for more.
Besides, this is the perfect time. Marvel's in the dumps right now.
Yeah, Marvel's in the dumps right now, but between them and DC failing so hard over the last 5 years, they've kind of tanked the whole genre right now. So it's like, this movie isn't just saving a new DC studios, or the DC brand. It's kind of like, can it prove superhero movies still have some legs in them? I don't know if Fantastic Four is going to continue that.
I think it's going to be terrible.
I have cautious optimism, even less than I did for Superman, but I'm
going on record as, when we see it, I'm going to say it's a mid-tier garbage, if not bad. Probably going to be mid-tier garbage.
Yeah, I'm kind of predicting mid-tier garbage. I'm predicting my rating for that one is going to be put it on in the background or maybe worth a watch. I don't think it's going to get to, like, rewatchable territory. I can hope. I want it to be good. I don't think it'll be too high a bar to clear for it to be the best Fantastic Four movie. When all's said and done, I will say that. It'll probably be like, well, it was the best one. Still not good, but it was the best Fantastic Four movie.
I don't think it's even going to do that. I don't think it'll beat the original one.
I do need to give that a rewatch. I watch it with rose-colored child nostalgia goggles that I saw when I was 7 years old and not since.
I saw it not that long ago, and it was still pretty good.
Yeah, like...
The second one's terrible.
Rise of the Silver Surfer came out in 2007, so I haven't seen that version of it in 16 years. No, my math's off. It's even 18 years. Yeah, that's the last time I saw that version of it, so I don't really remember. But, yeah, I hope David Corenswet shows up in the new Supergirl movie. I want to see this version pop up, make cameos. I want to see these characters pop up in other things. And I really want James Gunn to not make the mistake Warner Bros. Made with Henry Cavill and make a direct Superman sequel sooner than later. Whatever his plan is, if this movie does okay, don't wait on it.
Leave him alone for a bit.
Maybe for a bit, but don't, you know. Henry Cavill went right from Man of Steel into Batman v Superman. I don't mind Superman showing up in something else again, but we never got a Man of Steel 2. That was just a Henry Cavill-led Superman movie. Don't make that mistake again. Get us a sequel within the decade. Within 5 years, I'd say, is a reasonable thing.
That's reasonable. That's 10 years is way too long.
Yeah, get us a
You can't keep a character around if you're doing that.
Get us a solo Superman movie led by David Corenswet within the next 5 years and I'll be happy. He can pop up again in other things. I guarantee he'll pop up in other things, but make him the lead of his own movie within the next 5 years.
Get us Justice League in 3 years, and then 2 years after that you can do the sequel. Superman Returns.
I mean, they kind of tried that already. The Justice League movie released about 4 years after Man of Steel.
Well,
and they never.
Yeah, but that's not true. Batman v Superman was in there somewhere.
Just before that, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, but Batman v Superman sucked and so did Justice League, so.
I disagree, but people didn't like them, so.
Listen, they gotta do lots of other characters in between. They need to do a Blue Beetle sequel very soon, please.
Yeah, last word on that is that movie won't be canon, but he'll still be the guy will still be there. So
just use Blue Beetle, please. Just do it.
Yeah, they need to use Blue Beetle. I feel like James Gunn is in good hands if he lets the directors just kind of do their thing. I don't want to see every movie feeling like a James Gunn movie, and I don't think he does either.
Well, is he directing all of them?
No.
Oh, well, then it'll be fine.
No, I don't think he's even writing them. He's just kind of the last say on the script. And he's not writing any of them. He's just the last pass for the script. He's made it very clear that his operating principle for all the movies is the script needs to be in a place I'm happy with before I let it go into production. He's canceled or delayed multiple projects, which he previously announced, because he said the scripts just weren't there in the end. I like the pitch, but the scripts just weren't coming together the way I wanted. So
it's a good idea. Don't make the movie until it's ready to be made.
Yeah. And I noticed another thing that was interesting about Supergirl, which I was just looking it up, like just on Wikipedia, mind you, but it said that it wrapped filming around May and it's not releasing till June 2026. So I'm like, wow, they're giving it a year for post-production? Like, okay, that gives me a little bit of faith. They're not just
rushing it
out the pipeline like Marvel does. They're giving it an entire... It was about a...
That's the next one, so it's going to be a year before the next movie, basically.
It's going to be a year before the next movie, and they're giving it a year of post-production. So,
well,
they're letting it breathe. And the word on that is he only let that one be the second one because he liked the script so much. He's like, it wasn't necessarily going to follow up Superman with Supergirl, but he's like, I just want to put this one next because I really like it. And then the script was
the first one that came together. Yeah. Somebody's got to write a really good Blue Beetle script then.
Yeah, and then they have Clayface which, okay, I think that one's also supposed to come out next year. And that one could be really cool, depending on what they do with it. Basil Carlow has a really tragic story that you could play into. I don't know if you really know it, but long story short, he was a wannabe actor who ended up, you know, turning into the, it was kind of like a be careful what you wish for sort of scenario. He turned into a, you know, Clayface who can morph into anything, but he's also this monster now, and he can never undo that. So his acting career is kind of tarnished. I think it would also be cool if they took it like the 1940s version of Clayface before he became a clay monster. He was just like an actor who was really good at makeup and like disguises and stuff. That was like golden age version of Clayface. There's different ways you could do that, interestingly. I don't know which one they're doing. Say a Supergirl.
It's something different. It's different than what we've seen before.
Yeah, for sure. I know like Sergeant Rock was floated around. Like, okay, that's another 1940s hero that... All right, sure, Sergeant Rock movie. The Authority, that was one that was being floated. Just different weird thing. There's the Lanterns TV show on HBO Max. That one's coming together right now. I don't know when that's out. Peacemaker season 2. There's a variety of things on the pipeline. But yeah, so that's a bit of the future of DC as I know it. And I'm not rooting for Marvel to fail, just to be clear. I want Fantastic Four to be good. I want Secret Invasion and Doomsday to be good. I don't want to see it blow up in their faces. But I am still optimistic, but like extremely cautious.
I just don't care about Marvel characters that much.
All the ones we like left.
I didn't even like care about those characters to begin with, though.
Yeah.
Like, Marvel characters is just like, eh, whatever. If it works, it works. But that's why it's like, you're not that passionate about them, where it's like, DC, it's like, okay, everybody's kind of got a favorite DC character they want to see.
I'll tell you my problem with Marvel characters, and yeah, it goes all the way back to the 1970s, is that every Marvel character basically just has one story. Tony Stark is like, oh, woe is me, I'm not, I deal with my own personal demons, I was a bad guy, can I be a good guy, or am I just destined to create bad things? Thor is always a matter of, am I worthy enough? Banner is always trying to mix his two sides of like, okay, can I like get past my anger, merge the strength side of me with the smart side of me. You got Spider-Man, it's always with great power comes great responsibility, and just getting beaten the crap down all the time. Every time he nearly succeeds at something, he's gotta, you know, goes one step forward, three steps back.
Parker Luck.
Every Marvel character, I'm like, you've seen some adaptations of it. That's the whole character story, and you're just gonna get repeats. And the movies aren't that different either. Every single Marvel sequel is basically the same story again. Captain America is the same too. He's got the man out of time thing. He's got the, okay, I got the 1940s ideals in the modern era that kind of clash. I'm just like, okay, you can only do those characters so many times. DC characters are archetypes. You can put them in any scenario. And the more interesting the scenario, it's like, okay, well, how do DC characters interact in this scenario? And that's why they're just infinitely redoable. But Marvel's just like, yep, these characters have their stories and they ran their course 50 years ago. But we just keep redoing different versions of the same things. That's always been my problem with Marvel, is like, they're great for a bit. And then you see the story play out its course, and it's just like you're hitting the loop button over and over. So, that's my issue. It's not an MCU problem, it's a Marvel brand problem. And the MCU just happens to be a good adaptation of that, which is also the problem. So that's, I mean, I have other takes on why I'm more of a DC fan, but that's one of them. Marvel's just a very repetitive brand for me. Anyway. Superman 2025.
It's good.
Where can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram at jchurchtpm.
And you can find me on Instagram at ThoughtPlane Media. And check out thoughtplane.ca for everything else we do. There's hundreds of posts there for free. And you can donate a buck or two there if you like our work and you're feeling generous. We hope to see you on the next close-up with Ryan and Joe and Justin. Till next time.